Chapter 23. It's late on Tuesday night, about 8 o'clock, and Styles shifts awkwardly from foot to foot while he waits for someone to answer the door at the Argent house. He's still not at all sure about this. He knows it's what he should be doing, what he has to do. There's a part of him that wants to do it, but another large part of him that doesn't. But the door opens and the moment of truth arrives. Chris gives Styles one of those unfathomable looks, then stands back to let him in. Rather than leaving him in the front hallway, he actually motions for Styles to follow him into the kitchen. "What is it?" he asks, pulling a beer out of the fridge. Styles takes a breath to steady himself, and then, carefully keeping his voice even, he says, "I wanted to let you know that we have a new pack member." That surprises Chris. He just blinks at Styles as he twists the top off his beer. "I see," he finally says. "It's Danny Mahalani," Styles continues. Before Chris can ask, he takes another deep breath and then plunges in. "It's important for you to know what happened. He was helping us with the sorcerer. He had gone undercover as an apprentice, since Jackson is his friend. Unfortunately, he was badly injured when Jackson summoned up that damned lizard monster. We didn't think he would live, so we turned him." He meets Chris's gaze, unflinching. "We did it without his consent. We didn't have a lot of better options, but I know that we aren't supposed to do that, that we're never supposed to turn someone without consent. And I wanted you to hear that we did it directly from me, rather than from someone else. I'll accept whatever consequences that means for our truce." Chris takes a long, slow drink of his beer while he considers all this. Then he nods. "Thank you," he says, "for bringing it to me directly. I appreciate that. But I've told you before, we go after people who ruin lives, not people who save them." The words are like a punch in Styles' gut, and he lets out a little, choked noise of relief that sounds suspiciously like a sob. Because he respects Chris. Not only that, but he realizes that out of all the people in Beacon Hills, Chris is the one who sets his moral compass. Styles can't use his father. He's too good, has too much respect for the law. But he can't risk letting himself slip too far off the mark either. Chris goes after monsters, and so does Styles. They're actually a lot alike in many ways. Chris gives him a minute to steady himself before saying, "Is he going to be all right?" "Yeah," Styles says. He wasn't upset about it or anything. He's taking to it pretty well, all things considered."
"Okay then," Chris says. "Keep him in line, the way you keep all your pack members in line, and we won't have a problem."
Styles nods. Then he says, "I have something for you." He reaches into his pocket and withdraws a little memory card, handing it over. Chris takes it, and then his eyes widen momentarily.
"Is this?"
"The video," Styles says. "Yeah, it's the only copy. You have my word."
"Why are you giving this to me?" Chris asks.
Styles manages a wan smile. "A couple reasons. Primarily because I think we're beyond that now, aren't we? Because I want to have an alliance, not a truce. And that will never happen if I'm holding that over your head. Partly just to show that I respect you too much to do that to you. But also because it was never about the video, was it? Oh, maybe a little in the beginning. But not much. This was never keeping you in check. That's not the sort of person you are. If I had ever really stepped on your toes, if you'd ever really had reason to go after me and my pack, you would have done what you thought was right and damn the consequences. The video, the blackmail, it wouldn't have stopped you. So there's really no point in me holding on to it, is there?" After a moment, Chris shoves the little memory chip into his pocket.
"Sometimes I think you and I understand each other," he says.
"And then I say something obnoxious?"
Styles asks. Chris actually smiles. Yeah, he says. Pretty much. How are things going with this sorcerer? Not too bad at the moment, Styles says. Jackson's guilt over nearly getting Danny killed has gotten him free from Stone's evil clutches, and he let us bind his magic down. Plus, I got proof that he tampered with my car's brakes, and now his parents are involved. I'm getting him into therapy so he can work through all this massive, unfounded resentment he has for the world. He shoves his hands down into his pockets. So, one down, one to go. What do you think Stone's next move is gonna be? I'm not sure. With this guy, it could be anything. I'm working on trying to find where he's been hiding. I am so fucking sick of being on the defensive. I need to finish this. What have you got on him? Fucking nothing, Styles says. He pushes both hands through his hair. No credit cards, no license plates, no phone to trace, nothing. He's like a goddamn ghost. Chris considers this for a moment. He has to be getting supplies from somewhere. Yeah, but he showed up with enough cash that I think there's nothing to trace. I doubt he's buying them at October Moon. Styles sighs. I guess I can ask, but I'm still working on it. Chris takes another pull at his beer. You'll let me know when you find him? Styles considers this for a minute, then nods. Yeah, he says. Thanks. They say goodbye, and Styles goes back out to the car, where Derek is sulking at having been left behind. Styles assures him that it went as well as it could be reasonably expected, and heads back to the house. They've changed shifts on who gets to stay with Danny, so Scott and Allison are going to stay the night at his place. Erica and Lydia are at Erica's house, and Boyd and Isaac are at Boyd's. Styles is torn between the urge to do his homework and the need to go through the surveillance footage. When Derek notices the way he's twitching, he says, You know, I am capable of going through the recorded footage. You don't need to do everything yourself. Styles rubs his hands over his face and fights against the fact that he won't be satisfied unless he's watched it himself. You're not trained for what to look for. Neither are you, Derek points out. Why don't I watch them? Sheriff Stalinsky says, from where he's working his way through the pile of vegetables that Styles is forcing him to eat before any other meal options will come into play. Hell, Derek and I can go through them together. Two sets of eyes are better than one. And face it, kid, you're probably not in the best frame of mind for this. Styles has to admit that he can barely keep his eyes open. Okay, he says. I'll leave it to you two, then. Specifically, I'm trying to find out how he got there. I'm hoping I got a shot of him getting in or out of a car, so maybe I can track down the car's information. Stalinsky nods. We're on it, he says. So for the first time in a week, Styles sits down with his homework. He has a physics test to study for and an English paper to write. He's three assignments behind in pre-calc, although the teacher gave him an extension after she found out that he'd been with Danny in the hospital. Eric has done his Spanish homework for him, but he has to copy it down in his own handwriting, and it would help if he at least read it over if he wants to pass this Thursday's quiz. He has history reading to do, but that's a low priority. He knows all about the Korean War without having to look through a textbook. He sets all these things down on his desk and hops from assignment to assignment, because that's how he focuses best. 10 minutes on Ohm's Law, 15 sketching out an outline for his paper on William Faulkner, 4 trigonometry problems, a list of Spanish vocabulary, and then back to the beginning. He falls asleep at his desk around 11. Sometime later, he jerks awake at a quiet noise in his room and a hand on his shoulder. He lurches upwards and nearly clocks Derek across the face. The older man catches his wrist gently and holds on to it as Styles blinks himself awake. Sorry, Styles mumbles, rubbing his free hand over his face. My fault, Derek says. I should have known better than to sneak up on you. I was hoping I wouldn't wake you. Yeah, Styles says. Time's it. About 1. I thought I'd get you into bed. Styles lets out a gigantic yawn.
No problem,
he says, shoving what's left of his schoolwork aside. He's suddenly remembering that he's not going to be in school the next day anyway. He has to take Jackson and Danny to Los Angeles. Maybe he'll have Derek drive part way so he can finish some of this stuff up.
Any luck on the videos?
No. Well, sort of, Derek amends. No car. We think he walked there. We did catch a couple of glimpses of him. Your dad is going to call around and get some of the exterior security cam footage from the businesses and such around there. We got some of it tonight. That's why we were up so late. We'll see if we can figure out where he was coming from and track him back. It'll take some time.
Okay.
Styles allows Derek to pull him to his feet and across the room, where he falls into bed and is asleep again almost immediately. He's awake on and off throughout the night. Two different nightmares. But he manages to fall back asleep each time after numbing his brain, copying down Erica's Spanish homework. He's up at the usual time the next morning, and tired, but functional, and starts making plans for the day. Jackson is still grounded, and his parents aren't even allowing him to go to school. They're so intent on keeping an eye on him. Styles has to get his father's help freeing Jackson from their concerned clutches to take him to Los Angeles. Sheriff Stilinski picks him up at 7:30, telling his parents that he's going to let him shadow a couple of people at the station so he can see how real-life consequences work. The Whitmores agree readily, both because it sounds like a good idea and because they'd be willing to give Sheriff Stilinski just about anything he asked for at this point. Styles has to promise about 800 times that he will not let Jackson out of his sight for as much as a millisecond. This really isn't a problem for him, since he has no desire to in any case. They pick up Danny from his house and head south out of town. Styles shuffles through the CDs he's stored in his stupid rented Honda, looking for something good to put on. He's not picky when it comes to music, and Derek is a fan of classic rock, so he puts in the Rolling Stones. There's no fucking leg room back here, Jackson gripes from the back seat. Styles slowly turns to stare at him as he pulls up to a stop sign and says, Are you fucking kidding me? You do remember why my Jeep is in the shop, right? Jackson's jaw sets in a mulish expression. When no apology is forthcoming, Danny punches him in the shoulder. So Jackson mutters, Yeah, okay, whatever. Where are we going anyway? Los Angeles, Styles says. There's a woman there who makes protection charms. He sees Jackson's lip curl in disdain and says, Yes, before you ask, that is how we were able to stay safe from all the other spells you were casting on us. Don't look at me like that. Did you think I didn't know? Anyway, the spells require a drop of blood and the answers to some personal questions, so you get to come with us so they can be personalized. That explains why Danny's here, Jackson says. But why are you dragging me with you? Because we're getting one for you too, numbnuts, Styles says, trying to keep the exasperated impatience out of his voice. In case Stone decides to get back at you for quitting the Black Magic Academy? There's a long pause. Then Jackson says, Oh.
Oh. Really? That's all you have to say to that? Oh. Can I get a thanks, or an I appreciate that, or maybe sorry for all the trouble, or anything more than a syllable?
Jackson flips him off. Styles has to take a deep breath. Then Mick Jagger obligingly launches into You Can't Always Get What You Want, and he winds up laughing, near hysterically.
My fucking life, ladies and gentlemen, he says, shaking his head.
Derek is giving that little half-smile, and Danny is laughing, too. This only seems to cement Jackson's propensity to sulk, but Styles is beyond caring. They'll protect Jackson for Danny's sake, and because it's the right thing to do, and fuck whatever Jackson thinks of it anyway. He increases their speed as they get on the highway. It's not a bad little car, the Civic, At least it gets good gas mileage. Glad we had this little chat, he adds. And to be honest, he is kind of glad. Because if Jackson had suddenly started being nice to him and acting like something other than a complete self-entitled jerk, he would have known it was a lie, designed to lull him into false complacency. That would have only put him more on edge. He can handle typical bitchy Jackson. Anyway, he says, on the same subject, Rebecca's going to ask some questions about your life and require truthful answers. If you lie, the spell won't work as well. Actually, my guess is that if you lie, she'll know and probably refuse to do the spell at all. So, honesty is really important. And on that note, Jackson, I've got some information for you that I need you to listen to, so we can clear up some presumptions you've made about your life, lest you give Rebecca false information and cock up the spell. I'm all ears, Jackson says. Yeah, that's you, Jackson Whitmore, the good listener, Stiles says. He sees Danny tensing up and tries to ease them into it. You don't know anything about your biological parents, right? Jackson shifts a little and says, yeah, so? So you should know what happened to them. Fuck 'em, Jackson says. Not interested. Stiles sighs. There doesn't seem to be any way to soften the blow, but he'll try to work around what Danny's told him, so Jackson doesn't think Danny was spreading his personal business around. I'm going to guess that the reason you're so pissed off is because you think that they left you in a trash can somewhere. He sees Jackson open his mouth and talks louder to head him off before he can say anything. Well, they didn't. Your parents died in a car crash. One of those unfortunate, really nobody's fault accidents caused by bad weather, low visibility, and a blown tire. Your mom was pregnant with you at the time. You were delivered by C-section at the hospital. You made it. Your mom didn't. Jackson's mouth is half open. Stiles can see him in the rearview mirror, just staring. So whatever you think about why your real parents gave you up, whatever terrible assumptions you've made about them, you can put all that aside now, Stiles says. How? Jackson manages. Dumb luck, actually, Stiles says. Erica's dad was the insurance claims investigator on the case, and she knew about it. But, Jackson's voice trails off. He doesn't seem to have any idea of what to say. Stiles can't blame him for that. Now, I'm going to use my awesome skills at deduction and gather from your reaction that this is the first time hearing this information, Stiles continues. My guess is you asked your parents and they said, we'll tell you when you're older, and you extrapolated a bunch of terrible things, when really, my next guess is that they just figured it was too gory. What with the emergency C-section and everything. He glances at his rearview mirror again and sees Jackson swallow, his Adam's apple moving up and down. There's no way to soften it, so he just keeps talking. Apparently, your parents had been trying to have kids for a while and had started talking about adopting. A friend of your mother happened to be one of the ER nurses that night and called your mom when she found out that your biological parents didn't have any relatives who could take the child. I know that you've spent a lot of years thinking your parents didn't want you, but you're thinking about it all wrong, Stiles says. Any two schmucks with a dick and a vagina can make a baby by accident, if they're careless, if the condom breaks, if they're not safe. But when you're adopted, you know the people who took you in want you. They wanted you so bad. And it's not just that they wanted a baby, Jackson. They wanted you. I talked to that friend of your mother's. I guess you were in pretty rough shape for the first couple of weeks because you were premature. She says your mom sat by your bassinet all the time, day and night, singing to you because you were too fragile for her to hold or touch. And when the doctors said that you might have permanent damage due to the circumstances of your birth, your parents just said, okay, we'll take him no matter what. We'll foot the bill for everything because he's ours, even if all we get to do is hold him overnight and pay for his funeral tomorrow. God, Jackson, I know that life is rough for everybody. We all have our own burdens to bear, but don't ever, ever think that you aren't wanted. His gaze flicks up to the rearview mirror again. He can see Jackson struggling to control himself as tears slide silently down his cheeks. Danny reaches over to put a hand on his shoulder. Jackson bats it away, but then presses a hand against his face to hide his tears. He's losing his composure completely, and Styles can't hate him anymore, despite what he's done. He reaches over and turns the music up until it's blaring to give Jackson some semblance of privacy as he leans into Danny's shoulder and breaks down. The drive passes pretty much in silence except for the music, and Styles singing and drumming along because he literally cannot help it. He's got to have something to do. Driving is not enough to take up all his concentration. He's called ahead to make sure Rebecca's working, and she is. She gives Jackson the side eye, but Styles reassures her that he knows about Jackson's powers and everything is under control. She makes a charm for each of them, and Styles resists the urge to tell Jackson to pay for his own. He probably wouldn't tip well. Once they're back out at the car, they each put the little charm on a chain and put it over their heads, and then Styles allows himself a sigh of relief. He feels better now that Danny has one. The only reason he agreed to put it off for a day was because, frankly, he doesn't know that it will stop Stone. He had ample opportunity to get some sort of sample from both Danny and Jackson that will allow him to get around it. "Never take it off," he says to Danny, who nods. "Not for sleeping, showering, lacrosse, anything." To Jackson, he adds, "You can do whatever the hell you want, but don't come crying to me if Stone breaks you. Capiche?" "Whatever," Jackson says. Styles rolls his eyes and gets in the car. The drive back to Beacon Hills is just as painful as the drive there. It's past time when school will be out, and he's sure he'll find the rest of the pack at his house, so he brings Danny with him. The other teenager texts his parents to let them know he's going over to a friend's house and will be back after dinner. The others are indeed there, and so is his father. He glances up as Styles comes in with the others. "Hey, what are you doing home?" Styles asks. "Wanted to touch base with you about the hearing," Sheriff Stilinski says. "Then I'll drive Jackson home and see him safely into the arms of his parents." "Right," Styles says. "How'd it go?" "No dismissal," Stilinski says, and the words are like a punch to the gut, although Styles is glad his father didn't drag it out. 60 days for discovery and depositions. Trial date isn't set yet." "Shit, I can't believe this is actually going to go to..." Styles clenches his jaw over all the foul language that wants to come out of his mouth. "And it's going to drag on for another 2 months. Fucking excellent. That is just what I needed to hear today. What about the surveillance videos?"
"Still gathering footage," Stilinski says. "I'll sit down with you tonight with what I've got."
"Okay, cool, fine." Styles pushes his hands through his hair, leaving it standing up in loose spikes. "You go do whatever, you know. Take Jackson home and be a sheriff and shit. I'll see you later."
"Okay."
His father leans in and squeezes his shoulder, but doesn't hug him, doesn't crowd him. Then he turns and gestures for Jackson to follow him, which the teenager does, more than happy to get away from Styles, who looks like he's about to explode. After his father's sensible departure, Styles stands for upwards of a full minute, fists clenched by his sides, body vibrating with tension. Coping mechanisms, he reminds himself, and the pack is shifting uneasily. His rage affects all of them, so he swallows it down, at least for the moment, and turns to face the others. He focuses on Danny, poor, bewildered Danny, and says, "So, what's your method of dealing with stress? Cuddles or violence?" Startled, Danny blurts out, "Violence." Then he snaps his mouth shut, because two very different scenarios are playing out in his mind. One is a game of lacrosse. The other is Styles flattening Jackson in the cafeteria and Scott seeming to be genuinely worried about Jackson's ability to breathe afterwards.
"Wait, can I ask questions?"
"Sure," Styles says. "Of course." When you say violence, are you talking about a game of pickup lacrosse or something? Or are you talking about that ninja shit you pulled on Jackson? Denny looks around at the rest of the pack and thinks that if it's the second, maybe he'll just stay inside and watch a movie with the girls. Oblivious to his internal gender stereotyping, Styles says, "More like, I'm going to go out back with a baseball bat and try to beat the shit out of Derek, and he's going to stop me." Derek gives a little shrug. "Don't worry, it won't be the scary bat." "There are levels?" Denny asks incredulously. "Absolutely," Lydia informs him. Scott takes some pity on him and says, "Well, a blunt object wouldn't do a lot of damage to a werewolf, you know? So Styles has a special one that has silver wire on it, so it'll actually hurt werewolves. But he doesn't use it on us, obviously, because he doesn't actually want to hurt us."
"Right," Denny says. He's clearly trying to take in the fact that baseball bats aren't all that dangerous to him anymore.
"Have you guys thought about writing a handbook? Anyway, I think I'm going to go with Cuddles."
"Okay," Styles says. "And, no handbook. Under normal circumstances, we would have gone over all of this kind of shit with you in detail before we turned you. But, anyway, just ask whatever you want. They'll make sure you know everything you need to know." He ducks out from underneath Derek's arm and heads out back. Derek follows. After a few moments, Allison and Erica do as well. Scott hedges for a moment, then shakes his head when Allison gives him a questioning look over her shoulder. He's too edgy for violence to be a good idea right now.
"Popcorn?" Lydia asks, heading into the kitchen. Boyd and Isaac drag over the armchair and a few cushions, so there will be room for everyone in front of the television. Denny nods, looking over how everyone has divided up. In the end, he can't say that he's surprised that Erica went with Styles. That girl has a mean streak. But Allison caught him off guard.
"I didn't expect Allison to..."
He isn't even sure how to finish the sentence. He's equally surprised about big, bulky Boyd staying in. But maybe he shouldn't be. It's not like Boyd's ever tried out for the lacrosse team.
Scott looks up and grins a little. "Allison's our combat instructor," he says, "along with Derek." That makes Danny do a double take.
"Allison?"
"Yep,"
Scott says. From the look on his face, it's obvious that he's incredibly proud of his girlfriend.
She's got skills.
"You think that's hot, don't you?" Denny says, amused at Scott's response.
"Hell yeah," Scott says enthusiastically.
"You should see her with a bow and arrow," Isaac agrees, in his usual awkward sort of way when complimenting Allison. "It's just... devastating," Lydia says, coming in with the popcorn and tossing a piece at Danny's mouth. Denny automatically opens his mouth and tries to catch it. They've played this game before. It bounces off his nose, which is pretty normal. Snatching it up in one hand, without fumbling, is a little more strange, though. He blinks at it once before popping it into his mouth.
"So she taught Styles all that stuff he used on Jackson when Jackson got all up in his face that day at school?"
"Yeah," Lydia says. "She learns it from her dad, who does that kind of stuff for a living. Then she teaches all of it to us."
She flops down on the sofa and pats the space next to her. Denny drops down next to her at a socially acceptable distance. And then, after a moment, gives in to the twitching need to be close, and snuggles right up to her side.
"What does he do? Teach mixed martial arts or something?" he asks, as Boyd settles down on his other side and commandeers the remotes.
"He hunts werewolves," Lydia says brightly, as Isaac and Scott both sit down on the cushions in front of them, and Boyd starts fast-forwarding through menus and previews. "But only bad ones. He leaves us alone."
"That's just not the answer I was expecting."
Denny slouches down, fitting himself between Lydia and Boyd. It makes him feel safer. They obviously know the ropes, and he imagines he can just hide behind them. Maybe literally, in Boyd's case. There's lots of werewolf stuff we would have told you about before we turned you, if it all been done in, you know, the typical way, Scott says. Like, about hunters, and the way the pack fits together, and why you're edgy because Styles is edgy, and there's just a lot of shit to go over, you know? But we've been trying to take it slow since it's a big change. So I should just ask as things come up? Danny asks. Or will that make my head explode too? It's probably the best way to go about it, Lydia says, and the others nod in agreement. Danny accepts this and directs his attention to the movie that's starting. 10 minutes later, Erica comes back inside. There's blood on her chin and a split lip that's already healed. And one sleeve of her shirt has been completely torn off. Despite this, she seems quite cheerful and perky. Styles is really beating the stuffing out of Derek back there, she says brightly. Think we should charge for tickets? Danny goggles at her. Are you... He wants to ask if she's okay, but she's clearly fine. He's beginning to think that there's just something wrong with Erica. Lydia snorts. Are you kidding? I don't think Styles is in the mood for spectators right now. True, Erica says cheerfully. Hey, popcorn! She plops down in Boyd's lap, her legs sprawled across Danny's lap, and feet ending up in Lydia's. Danny curls a hand over one of her calves like it's the most natural thing in the world, without even thinking about it. Scott holds out a box of tissues to Erica. Before you get blood on Boyd and one of his little sisters starts quizzing him. Right, Erica says, wiping the blood off her chin. They're about halfway through the movie when the back door opens again and the others come in. Styles' feet are dragging, and he's obviously exhausted. Allison's moving a little stiffly, although Derek seems all right. She immediately curls up on the cushion with Scott, cuddling close to him. Styles groans and drags another beanbag chair over in front of the sofa, collapsing into it. He leans his head against Lydia's calf and loops an arm around Danny's, knowing that his new pack member will find comfort in his alpha's touch. Danny relaxes into a nearly boneless state against Styles' hand. The understated nervous buzzing that he hadn't exactly been aware of stops, and he sighs contentedly. Derek, for his part, sprawls out on the floor, ending with his head and shoulders in Styles' lap. Anyone whose feet or legs he ends up lying on, well, that's their problem. Styles manages to stay still for 15 minutes before he begins to shift uneasily. And then, 5 minutes after that, he says, "Who wants ginger snaps?" and springs to his feet. Everyone around Danny comes to attention. A huge grin spreads over Erica's face. "Ooh, the virgin cookie face!" She slaps a hand against Boyd's chest. "You've never seen it live before!"
"Can't wait," Boyd remarks, amused.
Danny just blinks. What the actual fuck does that mean? Lydia takes out her phone and starts scrolling through photographs, then shows Danny a picture of Erica making a face that would be considered close to orgasmic. So it all started when Styles said that the working dogs at the station go nuts over his ginger snaps.
"Wolves aren't dogs," Derek announces from the floor.
He sort of has to protest, or people will think he's sick again. Everyone ignores him. Lydia slides to a new photo, this one of Isaac. "Just in case you don't recognize the expression of unadulterated bliss on a woman's face," she says, and Danny gives her a good-natured shove.
"They're really good," Isaac says. "I mean, dude, you just have to... They're just really good."
Danny nods and looks at Styles. "I will have some of your sex cookies." Amused, Styles says, "Try to contain your excitement. The dough has to refrigerate for an hour before I can bake them."
"Now I've been cookie-blocked,"
Danny mourns. Styles just lets out a snort of laughter and wanders into the kitchen. They can hear him whistling as he starts baking. Derek has half risen as if to follow him, but when he hears the whistling, settles back down. Danny presumes that the whistling is a good sign.
Styles does come back for the second half of the movie, although he's sitting there fiddling with his laptop while he watches, apparently incapable of sitting still for that long. By the time the movie is over, the cookies are in the oven. Danny is trying to find the words to express how amazing they smell. "I don't even usually like ginger snaps," he says, as Styles pulls a tray out of the oven and starts fending off salivating werewolves with a spatula. "They're too hot! You'll burn yourselves!" he says, swatting Erica's hand with the implement. "I'd heal," she says, staring at the cookies greedily. Allison laughs and says, "You won't even be able to taste them if you burn off your taste buds." Scott knows better than to challenge the spatula and just waits. Meanwhile, Derek is very quietly trying to edge around Styles. Styles seems oblivious to this as he turns to set the oven's timer for the next batch of cookies, but as soon as Derek reaches for a cookie, the teenager turns around and literally throws himself at Derek, glomping onto him with so much force that he's knocked backwards. Styles wraps his legs around Derek's waist and says, "Gotcha!" Derek makes a startled noise, one arm wrapping around Styles automatically, and the other flailing for balance as they tumble back into the fridge. "You're a lunatic," he protests, but he's nearly laughing as he says it. His goal was really more to amuse Styles than to actually get a cookie, so he considers this a win.
"Aren't they adorable?"
Erica says to Danny, her mouth full of cookie.
"Fuck me, that's hot,"
she announces cheerfully, grabbing another. Lydia and Scott already have one crammed into their faces as well.
"I am never gonna fuck you, darling," Danny replies cheerfully, while watching Styles and Derek.
He thinks back to the first time he saw Styles throw himself at Derek, and how he had wondered if his gaydar was broken. But no, it's really not. There's no sexual attraction there. He's not sure how he knows it, but he does. On the other hand, he can tell that neither of them are on the market anymore, and they never will be. He takes another sniff and says, "Give me one of those," snatching up a cookie. Derek looks up from where his face is squished in Styles' shoulder. "Turn around, or you'll miss it. The cookie face." He pokes Styles on the side, where he's ticklish. Styles' feet drop back to the floor, and he squirms away from Derek's hand. "Asshole," he says, but turns around readily enough. Derek keeps an arm around his waist and pulls him so he's nestled right into the line of Derek's body.
"You love me anyway," he says,
as everyone stares at Danny, who's starting to feel extremely awkward about this whole cookie business. Allison, the only person besides Styles who isn't desperate to get one of the cookies, holds up her phone to get a picture. Somewhat nervously, Danny takes a bite. Then he gives an involuntary moan.
"Ha!" Styles says. "Success!"
He pulls away from Derek and busies himself getting another tray ready to go in the oven. "I've never met a werewolf I couldn't win over with my ginger snaps," he says, perhaps a bit smugly.
"Did you actually give any to the Alpha Pack?"
Derek asks. "While they were here? No," Styles says, "but I may have possibly sent them a care package later. At least one of them might have proposed marriage. I turned them down, though."
"Which one?"
Derek asks, then realizes Styles used the plural.
"Wait, at least? Them? How many people have tried to marry you?"
"They didn't try, they just asked. And it was Yaz and Justin. Like you know, a polyamory kind of thing," Styles says cheerfully, as he rolls the dough between his palms and dips each one in sugar before placing it on the tray. "I would have totally said yes, too, if it meant I got a shot at Yasmin. Because, damn!"
"Everything's cool between alphas and lupas, huh?"
Derek says, boosting himself up to sit on his normal spot on the counter.
"Do I even want to know?" Danny asks, halfway through his third cookie. "If I get fat, I'm blaming all of you."
"Fair," Styles says. He glances at the timer on the oven and says, "We can tell you the whole story, but I've been kind of afraid it would scare the shit out of you.
Yes, even after everything you've seen with Jackson going psycho and his personal murder lizard and shit. More scary than the fact that an albino Komodo dragon thing tried to eat us, or the fact that you come up with cute nicknames like personal murder lizard, or anyone knowing how to get all that shit out of my backyard like nothing ever happened? Danny asks, then pauses. Shit, I sounded a little hysterical there, didn't I? Derek reaches over and rubs a hand over his hair. Just a little, he says, and Danny resists the urge to crawl into Derek's lap. He remembers seeing Derek do the exact same thing to Lydia on the day he had found out about the pack. He hadn't understood, just from watching, how strangely soothing the gesture was. And yeah, Stiles says, because no one has actually died or been shot, and I haven't even needed to poison myself. So, all things considered, we're actually not doing too badly. And you will not be poisoning yourself, Derek says, glaring at Stiles. Is death very likely? Danny asks hesitantly. Stiles purses his lips and slides the next batch of cookies out of the oven. I don't dare say I've got everything under control, since there's no faster way to jinx myself, he says. But things are definitely looking up from a week ago. So I'll say death is a possibility, but one that I'm doing everything in my power to prevent. And when Stiles is set on something, Scott begins, look out, world. Half the pack agrees.